The second paper on the program is by Mr. McDonald of the Ottawa Center, Amateur Meteor Observing in Ottawa. Mr. McDonald.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be speaking on amateur meteor observing in Ottawa just since 1962. Most of the observing is carried on by student members, and we consider everything before 62 prehistoric. So we'll have the first slide, please. First slide. This is how we started. You have some idea of our level of organization to begin with. The thing began in August 1962, if I can get this a little better here. There we go. As a summer camp out in the backyard by three very green observers. And this fellow looks rather green himself. This is taken about 1 hour after sunrise, after he'd completed about 6 hours meteor observing and 3 hours sleep. Our methods improved quite a bit during 1963. This was taken during the October Orinids in 1963. You can see we have cots to keep us off the grass, hot soup to keep us contented, and hot coffee to keep us awake. We also did some observing during the winter. Rather a foolish idea, I suppose. Best method to keep warm is the balaclava. The one worn by Russ Thompson on the left here is probably the best idea, most comfortable, and also keeps you warm. The one worn by Rick Lavery on the right, well, it might keep him warm, but I don't think he sees very many meteors with it. This is a NCC map, I believe, of the Ottawa region. You can see Ottawa in the center with the Ottawa River sneaking through the slide. Most of our observing was done in the center or the west end of the city, right about here. Another group was observing over in the east end at Elmville Acres here. During 1966, observing conditions became so impossible we had to move to the country. And the Defense Research Board came to our rescue and offered us the use of the quiet site in this area here. Observing conditions are excellent except for about 20 degrees on the eastern horizon. To get there, you just go along Highway 17, along here, and then make your way north along this dashed line. This is what that dashed line looks like in April. Just getting there was our centennial project. This is a bird's eye view of the quiet site. I'll try and focus that a little better. This is the 20-foot radio telescope. I'll explain the use of that later for as far as meteor observing is concerned. This small green object is a van that was loaned to us by DRB. Hut 37 is more or less off limits as far as we're concerned. This is a 4-inch Unitron dome. And this is Hut 21, which contains very useful washroom facilities. And this is the observing hill. You can barely see it, but it's high enough just to keep us off the ground so that when the morning fog rolls in, we don't get wiped out. You're back on the ground in April now, and you'll notice a slight ditch going from the radio building 300 yards to the observing hill. This is the site of a 300-yard cable, which provides communication between the radio telescope, the dome, the small hut, and the hill on which we observe. This is looking the other way from the van. You see the Unitron dome in Hut 21. This is the van in the foreground in which the tape recorder, shortwave radio, and other observing equipment is stored. And this is the 20-foot radio telescope. Here you see a close-up of the forked mounting. A camera can be mounted on the central plate here, and if the dish is pointed at the northern horizon, you get a clear camera field from the southern horizon all the way to the zenith. And as a result, you have a sturdily mounted, well, about a 10-ton mount, I guess, for about a 2-pound camera, which provides a very good sidereal mount. This is the telescope at night. Now, the poor person who has to mount the camera and change the film has to climb the scaffold and mount it on here. We usually draw lots for that job. This is a photograph taken from the mount. The red color here is due to a red safety light on the scaffolding. Here you see the double cluster HTI Persei M34, and down here you see a reddish Perseid meteor. This photograph is about 20 minutes, rather overexposed, on Anticrome 500. This is a scene in the van at the far end of the quiet site. This is Doug O'Brien, our electronics whiz. He's holding a microphone and using the tape recorder amplifier to talk to observers on the hill via that cable, which I mentioned before. This is a shortwave radio, and I'll explain that later. There are two more observers, Ken Hewitt-White and Dave Patterson. Ken's fiddling with a shortwave radio. The CHU time signals are fed into track one on the tape recorder, while on track two, the voice reports from the observer 300 yards away is fed into track two. So as a result, we have a very detailed record, and a permanent record on tape, of all the observations of that night. And on normally, say, an EARSID night, you might not consider this an advantage, but during the last Perseid, we had 1,808 meteors in one night. And without this tape recorder, we would have been up the creek. This is the scene on the hill. This looks rather like a put-up job, which it is. These coffins were built during 1965, and they look rather the worse for wear, thanks mainly to the local porcupines. This is Ken Hewitt-White. He's holding a microphone, and his voice is being recorded on the van, in the van 300 yards away. Normally, the microphone is in a central position so that all the observers can talk in a normal tone of voice and their observation will be recorded, as well as various other candid remarks. This is the scene at the power box, about 100 feet from the observing compound at the base of the hill. In the spring, there's always a bird's nest right in about here, and at this very moment, there are four blue eggs in a nest, and I'm not sure whether they've hatched yet. So we have to be careful what we do in the spring. This is the observing group in pleasanter days, August 12th, about 1 hour before sunset. About an hour after sunset, about another six observers will arrive. These people have been camping here, some for the weekend, others for as long as 2 weeks. There were several 35 millimeter cameras in use during the night. This one was a photograph taken by Rick Salmon. This meteor here, you see, is a Perseid, probably about 0.5 magnitude, recorded at 2347 on the night of August 12th to 13th. This one was recorded about 1 minute later. Both these meteors, like all the other meteors that night, were recorded on tape. And we can tell from this meteor was seen by four observers, and one observer, Ken Hewitt-White, recorded at a 0.5. His estimate was probably most accurate, since anything fainter than 0.5 wouldn't register on this film. Three other observers called it anything from 1 to 1.5. All meteors that were photographed are supposed to be plotted, but unfortunately, in the pandemonium created by the coming of the second meteor, we completely forgot about this one. This one was probably about minus 0.5, considering it's about one magnitude brighter than its predecessor. Only two people got around to plotting the second one. Meteors were coming in at the rate of 6 a minute, so that's quite understandable. This is the top arrow here is the plot from Rick Salmon's photograph. Under here is my plot, which is in reasonably good agreement with the photograph. This is Steve Craig's plot. The beginning is reasonably good, but the continuation here could be explained by a faint continuation of the meteor, which wouldn't record on the film, or else Steve's over-exuberance of the plotting pencil. This is another overlap, which unfortunately wasn't photographed. You see, we agree reasonably well on the starting position, but we can't get together on the end point. Normally, you'd expect the reverse, since the beginning point is rarely seen, whereas the end point usually attracts interest. This is a magnitude distribution of Rick Salmon's meteors. The reason I picked on Rick was because he did the graphs for us. Under here on the x-axis, you can see the magnitude numbers from minus 3 up to plus 5. And these are the percentages, relative percentages, from 20 down to 0%. You see, he has a double peak here, but he's in reasonably good agreement with the group curve. This dotted line is the smooth distribution for the entire group. This is Steve Kipp, our most prolific meteor observer. He saw 360 meteors in one night. I think that's a record as far as we're concerned. He'd only been observing for 5 days, but his distribution is reasonably good, with the exception of a very high peak at 2.5. This is the distribution for the entire 11 observers who observed during the night, and this is a smooth approximation for that, which we used on the other graphs. You'll notice on the fainter magnitudes, the half magnitudes predominate, 2.5, 3.5, and 4.5, whereas in the brighter magnitudes, the even magnitudes predominate, 0, 1, and 2, This is partially due to the fact that we have the 0, 1, and 2 standards, our standard stars, are very prominent in the summer sky, forming a very prominent triangle in the south. And the fainter side, perhaps it's a psychological reasons. We haven't really decided what's the cause of that. Could we have the lights, please? Right now, we're continuing our analysis of earlier observations with the help of Dr. Stoll of the NRC. He's on loan from Czechoslovakia at the moment, and he'll be returning to Czechoslovakia in August, so we're really going to have to work. Is there any questions? Lights, please. Do we have the lights?
Any questions on this paper?
Yes, what kind of a camera have you mounted on the radio television?
That particular photograph you saw was taken by a Pentax F2. Really, any 35mm camera or any camera would do. Anything else?
What film did you use for color, for the color job?
You mean the astronomical ones? Or the...
Yes.
That was... Anska Chrome 500. Thank you very much.